Welcome to Hope with Depression. Tosh Britton, hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
It's an absolute honour and a pleasure. So please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and what you do, because it might be easier to ask you what you don't do, because there's a whole repertoire of Tosh, isn't there?
There is.
Come on
then. I've kind of collected a load of tools and practices along the way and training and courses. So I'm a mindfulness teacher. I'm also a Reiki master teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically help people through tough times in their lives and just help them reconnect back to themselves, who they are, their members of their families, their communities, just to really, you know, back to their health, back to, you know, their mojo, you know, getting them back to who they used to be before the stuff kind of happened that they feel like they've lost themselves, really.
I love that. There must be so many people that want to get their mojo back. We all know what it feels like. We can't quite remember where we lost it, and we can't quite... I think... Is it just covered up by a load of stuff? And if you sort of remove the stuff, it's sort of there already. It's sort of already there, just kind of obscured.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, I see it as like a little burning ember, and it's like your little inner funny. And, you know, along the way, and life's tough for so many people, many, many, many people, and even people that you wouldn't think, you know, life's tough for.
Mm.
And we just kind of get stuff layered up with, you know, there are emotional layers in there. So stuff we bury, things that happen to us, and that sort of, you know, stiff upper lip and just get on with it and all that stuff. And so, you know, that happens, and things that people say to us, and just life events. And, you know, life's tough, and a lot of people these days are feeling really ground down and kind of tired. They're feeling blocked. They're feeling a little bit like they're sort of inside some little, I don't know, like cube or something, bouncing around and not really knowing how to get out of it.
I mean, this must apply to so many, so many. People get up, they take the kids to school, they come home, rinse, repeat, do the housework, da-da-da, you know, deal with the daily stresses and strains of life. And, you know, they're being responsible, and they're adulting quite well. But deep down, there's a kind of grinding dissatisfaction. Maybe sometimes it takes something bigger to wake people up. Do you see that in your clients?
Yeah, massively. And I'm sure many of your listeners as well will identify this. And it may be that, you know, I see clients that have lost loved ones and children. People who have been through divorce and sort of lost themselves. I also see people who have been through years of abuse. And they've all had help and counselling, but sometimes it really is just about saying, okay, we don't need to talk about it anymore. It's just being with the feelings, the emotions. And, you know, sometimes we just need permission to go, actually, I just feel really, really not good. And, you know, I don't have to put that brave face on every day.
Well said. Because eventually that stiff upper lip cracks.
Yeah, and it almost like comes back, and it, you know, bites you on the backside. Even, you know, it gets harder and harder. And I think this is why so many people these days, you know, sort of shows like this and podcasts where people can actually hear that other people have been through stuff, not necessarily the same stuff, but have the same feelings and same emotions attached to the same life events or similar, is a very powerful medium to help people. And I'm going to put it out there, like, heal, really.
I agree. My first mission with this podcast was for people to know they're not alone.
Yeah.
Circumstances might be different, but the feelings are the same underneath. Anyone can feel painful feelings. Anyone can feel, you know, bad feelings. And it's become recently to me so important, the importance of just allowing yourself to feel what you feel rather than trying to rationalise it away. I shouldn't feel this way. I've got a lot to be grateful. Excuse me, I shouldn't drink Diet Coke for our podcast. I shouldn't feel this way. I shouldn't. I'm really good with the editing machine as well. I shouldn't. I shouldn't feel this way. I should be grateful. Oh, now I feel bad that I don't feel grateful. Oh, I'm having a bad effect on people around me. I shouldn't do this. I shouldn't do that. And it's just another layer of rubbish.
It is. And we just go around in circles.
I know.
So right. And it's literally like this. It's like we're doing our own heads in.
Mm.
And because we don't actually, for much of the time, we actually don't know how to get out of our heads. And that's what I help people with. So they can actually, you know, have some space and some calmness and some stillness as well. And they can notice when the mind monkeys, I call them the mind monkeys, you know, get involved and they start kicking out. They can, you know, have a festival in your head. They can do all sorts.
Oh, they've had full-on four-day festivals in my head. There's been a virtual monkey Woodstock going on in my head.
Yeah, I've had one of those
over
too.
Over the years. So... So if you don't mind sharing what you're comfortable with, just a little of your personal experience, because you obviously came to mindfulness for a reason. Anything you're comfortable with sharing, only just on the basis it's so useful to know that you're not alone and the people listening are not alone. You know, you've been there and done it maybe.
Yeah, totally. I'm really happy to. I think
Thank
it's
you.
How people learn. It's how people kind of understand that they're not alone.
Yeah. Or weird or wrong. Or bad.
Or wrong. Or bad. Broken, or that they're not good enough.
Yeah. All of that. All of that. You know, mental health. I mean, we're weird, us human beings. We're really robust in some sense. Mm. But we're so sensitive and in others. You know, and mental health, for me, it's sacred ground.
Yeah.
And anything, any influence, any authority that challenges people's mental health, I think needs challenging right back. To be honest. Anyway, over to you. How did you come to mindfulness?
Okay, so I kind of grew up in a family where meditation wasn't, you know, an unusual word. And I kind of meditated and I've done yoga for years and years and years, on and off. And I went through a separation with my now ex-husband in 2012. Okay. And we kind of pretty much went through bankruptcy at the same time as well. So it was like a real double whammy. The two weren't connected. I just remember one day dropping the kids off at school and I came back and I was making myself a cup of tea. And I couldn't finish making myself a cup of tea because I just started crying. And I sort of sank to the floor and then kind of went, I better get some tissue for wipe my nose and whatever else. And I went into the downstairs loo and I sat there for the next 6 hours, just crying for 6 hours. And I was kind of like, for the first time, I just was like, actually just let this all go, just cry and just let it all out, just get it out, because it's just making, you know, it's, I don't know, it was just bubbling up inside me. I just felt like I was going to go mad. My head was just full of, my head was so busy. I had like no peace from like 4 o'clock in the morning all the way through until I literally sort of fell into bed and went to sleep, only to be waking up 5 hours later. So, and I came out of there and I thought, and I kind of went, okay, I'm still alive, right? I'm going to be really gentle with myself now because I've just been through something really big. And I just went and sat in my bedroom, actually, somewhere I felt really secure. And this is something I would suggest as well, to be somewhere you feel nurtured and safe. And I just sat there for half an hour and I didn't play any music or anything or any apps. Not sure there are that many. I think Headspace had just come out then, but there was nothing else. And I just sat there listening to the birds in the garden, and I felt really peaceful at the end of 30 minutes. It might have been about 40 minutes, but I just felt such peace. And I thought, oh my goodness me. And it reminded me that having that stillness is really important. And I think also we need to maybe talk, if you're happy to, about what happens when the mind monkeys get ignored for a bit.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Okay, so one of the big things I find when I'm teaching people is we talk about mindfulness, we talk about meditation, and people kind of roll their eyes and they go, oh God, I can't do that, I've tried that. I get that. There are some days. So after my 30 minutes, I was like, yeah, I can meditate. Life's going to be great. And then I kind of sat down.
People used to be embarrassed about meditating.
I know, it's because they think they're all going to disappear off and like sit on unicorns by with sparkling waterfalls and...
Yeah, it's really not like that.
No.
I'll just share this story and I might edit this out, but I remember it was a story of a girl who was meditating and her flatmate was banging on the door, what are you doing in there? And she was so embarrassed to be caught meditating. She went, I'm masturbating.
Oh my God.
And her flatmate went, oh, that's fine then.
That's okay.
But never admit to meditate.
I know, but I think for so many years it's just been like people said like it's a real woo-woo thing.
It's not.
The meditation I do is literally sitting and breathing, listening to the sounds, checking in with my body. So it's body focused, it's breath focused. It's not about me disappearing off anywhere else. It's about me just watching my thoughts, which can be difficult sometimes as well, depending on what's going on. I've fallen asleep meditating. I actually used to fall asleep meditating so much that I had an espresso coffee one day to try and keep myself awake. I just kind of like playing with it a bit.
Did it work?
Yeah, it did actually. It was quite cool because then my mind monkeys were like super, super like bonkers. And they were so busy and I was like, okay, so I'm just going to like, I probably won't do that again, but it was interesting. But sometimes I was so, depending on how you're feeling, so whether you've had a busy day or you've got a lot going on, it can be more challenging to sit and just be still and watch your thoughts. And yeah, there are lots of factors, you know. It's like anything. It's like riding a bike. You've got to kind of have a go many times over to get it right. And
but you found peace after 30 minutes. I mean, that's a really good thing to hear. You say you felt so peaceful. So it doesn't have to take a long time. I think that's another meditation myth, that it's going to take years and years and years and years before you get a glimpse of anything. And that just ain't so either, is it?
No, but I think I was also really exhausted from all that crying as well. I think I was so tired. I think I was just mentally, emotionally exhausted, but...
There must be so many like you. This is why I asked you to talk about this, because there must be so many literally just at that point, just literally at that point, they say, look, I've done all the things I'm supposed to do. I've got the qualifications. I've worked hard. I'm the best mum or dad I can be. I do this. I'm responsible, blah, 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 blah. And yet, so people are looking for solutions, for alternatives, for different ways of...
Yeah.
And you're right, it's not about riding off on unicorns. If anything, it makes you more here. It makes you more present. It's
exactly
the opposite of riding off on unicorns, isn't it? And for my money, it's good that we live in these times where things like this can be measured. We've got science involved now with meditation, which might seem unlikely bedfellows. But, you know, all thanks to Ruby Wax, you know, Oxford University, they're now measuring the happiness circuits when people practice mindfulness. And there's proof positive that it works.
They actually are pretty good bedfellows, actually.
They are now.
They are.
But you might not have thought they were at first.
No, but like anything in life, you know, there is resistance, you know. It's and I think it's all part of the process of people finding, you know, ways and I don't know, practices and tools that don't scare them as well. And I would just say, just don't be scared of meditation. But it is quite scary because when we have painful emotional thoughts, the last thing we want to do is go into them and just, you know, be with them because they hurt. You know, these are painful experiences that we buried inside of us that sort of come up, you know, if we're meditating or quiet or, you know, something's happened in your relationship.
Yeah, let's talk about this. How do we deal with the painful? Just before we do that, I think it's important to point out also, you don't have to have a complete breakdown before you start on this path.
No.
I listened to, I read a blog of an energy healer, and he said it's good preventative maintenance. He says don't wait until, you know, your boss, you're so, it's all about energy flow with him, don't wait till you're so blocked that physical illness manifests, you know.
But this is
keep
the thing.
Clearing yourself out regularly. Do preventative maintenance. Don't wait till you absolutely, as you were by the sound of it, at the point of collapse before you finally let it all go. It doesn't have to be so extreme. So a gentle daily practice. And I'm the worst hypocrite. I can talk a very good talk, but I'll probably forget to do it tomorrow. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I think this is why I particularly liked mindfulness, because, you know, you can put post-it notes up on your bathroom mirror, you know, just saying five breaths, and you just take five breaths and you just follow your breath with your mind, and, you know, you follow the breath up your nostrils and the back of your throat, down to your belly, through your chest. And then you just let your belly expand on the in-breath, so when you breathe in, and you contract on the out-breath. And you just follow your breath. So how meditation, mindfulness meditation, is about literally focusing your mind on what you're doing. And, you know,
whatever that might be.
Whatever that might be. And it could be like, you know, bathroom mirror, brushing your teeth in the morning. Use the other hand with your toothbrush in to brush your teeth, because then you have to really focus on what you're doing rather than brushing your teeth and thinking about what you're going to have for breakfast, what's going to happen at work ahead. To brush your teeth properly, you have to fully focus. So one of my big things is you always brush your teeth with your other hand.
Okay. I'll try that tomorrow morning.
There we go.
Left-handed teeth brushing. This could be in. This could be curing. I know. This could be
curing. Somebody will be like, actually, what happens if you're ambidextrous? But
yeah, I know. All right, brush your teeth with your foot. Interesting. Yeah. Might be good at some yoga moves to do that. Yeah, but it's fascinating, and I love the way. I mean, I love what you've created. We talk about the work you're putting out into the world, which is pretty significant stuff. Actually, we'll certainly come on to that. And by the way, please use this as your forum to mention, you know, and showcase anything that you do, because I think the world deserves to know about it. So there was that complete catharsis, the 6 hours crying, and then the mindfulness meditation started. And now you wouldn't be without it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like my friend now. If I feel like I'm getting anxious, I'll go, whoa, where did that come from? And the mind monkeys, you know, they're kind of like banging on the door going, yoo-hoo, we're still here. Because, you know, just because you learn to meditate, just because you put lots of tools in place, doesn't mean to say that everything just goes away. And Jon Kabat-Zinn, who is the, you know, who brought mindfulness over to the West.
He's the godfather of mindfulness.
Yeah, he's the godfather of mindfulness. You know, he talks about weaving a parachute, and certainly after, you know, I run courses and, you know, it's putting practices and those tools and those meditations that work for you as well. And I think it's really important. What works for some people won't always work for others. So it's really finding what works for you. And it may be even like you just going for a walk outside, getting some deep breaths, some fresh air. It could be that, you know, you just stop and do some breathing while the kettle boils. Mm. You know, it could be sitting in your car before you go to work, before you go walk into the office in the car park, and you just take some deep breaths. And, you know, I can obviously share with you some of the practices and tools and things like that. So, but
yeah, I'd love to. We'll certainly do that.
You've got to, if something doesn't work for you, you're never going to practice it. So we're all different, and it's just finding. And there are so many ways to, like,
come
practice,
back to the moment.
And it's just finding what works for you, because then you're just going to better integrate it into your life and easily.
Absolutely. Oh, this is very good stuff so far. Where did I want to go now? No, this is great. So do you see? I mean, oh yeah. So let's just describe what we mean by mind monkeys. They're all the voices in the head that they tend to be very loud and screamy, don't they? And
yeah,
sort of,
they do.
You should be doing this. You should be doing that. No.
So this is what I really like about my mind monkeys. I'm not sure if anybody knows about it, but as soon as you start looking at what the mind monkeys are doing, it's almost like they get bored and they walk away. If that makes sense.
Oh, I like that. I haven't heard it put that way before.
Yeah.
So the minute you give them attention,
they all get a little bit bored. They all start twiddling their fingers and they all start sloping away.
So you could see it like a sort of inner bully. Because if the bully gets bored and you don't react, then generally, well, they just get bored and they'll go and pick on someone else. So is it the same thing? You're not sort of resisting the mind monkeys, and because you're not resisting them, they can't
stick around?
They're
far less likely to be louder. And it's kind of like that. It's almost like sort of facing your fears and doing it anyway.
Yes.
And as soon as you walk through your fears, you kind of go, wow, you know, what was I so worried about? And just to sort of, you know, give you an example.
Please.
I take people down to the sea and we do lots of breathing, and I take them down all weathers and all year, and we go in and we don't have wetsuits, and they're all going, oh, it's really cold, it's really cold. And okay. Last year,
if I book you, I'm booking you in the summer.
Last year, I decided I was going to get over my fear of cold water.
All
and
right.
On the 6th of January, I went in the sea in Cornwall without swimming costume, without a wetsuit, sorry.
I was going to say, what kind of therapy is this?
Yeah, get over all fears.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, that one's next week.
And it was literally like, and I was like, I'm just going to take some deep breaths and I'm going to focus on my breath and I'm going to walk into the water.
Mm.
And there's this amazing guy called Wim Hof, who's called the Iceman. And he
I've heard of the Wim Hof method.
Yeah, he does this amazing breathing. And he literally takes people on treks around Poland and everywhere, like these really snowy, cold countries. And they do snow angels in shorts and T-shirts. God, and
Gwyneth Paltrow's just done it. Yes. There's a Netflix series, The Goop Lab. I think it's episode 2. They do the Wim Hof method.
Yeah. So, and you know what? So I talk to these ladies in particular, and we kind of just go in. And they just go, I haven't been in the sea for years and years and years, and it's so cold. And at the end, they're whooping it up. They're laughing. They feel so empowered, and your body just feels incredible.
Amazing, yeah. Oh, that endorphin hit.
Yeah.
But it's an emotional endorphin as well, because you can do things that you thought you couldn't do. So if I'm reading this right, then you're saying that the fears aren't really as big as we think they are once you can face them down.
The mind monkeys
like the mind monkeys. So the mind monkeys, number one, they're very loud. Number two, they get bored easily, and number two, they lie. So I'm not really, you know. So I'm thinking we shouldn't give them too much attention. But the only thing is, if we do give them attention, then they go away. It seems to be so counterintuitive because we normally run away from stuff. But there is a thing in mindfulness, turning towards, isn't there? Most of us try and run away from painful stuff, which causes more problems. Mm. And I want to touch on this now. And it seems like the counterintuitive approach works. Turning towards it means, I suppose, you're not in resistance to it. If you're not in resistance to it, it can't stay. The opposite of that is what you resist persists, right? Yeah. So what happens when you are meditating, though? And because you said at the beginning of this interview, you've come across people who've had terrible things happen to them. Mm. And when they start to meditate, these feelings will come up to be healed. So how would one cope when the really painful shit starts coming up?
Okay, so for example, just you're sitting there, and I would normally suggest that you don't walk into the big stuff first, because that just, you know, that would just be too difficult. And you just don't want to upset people any more than they are. And I just ask them to sit with something like on a scale of 1 to 10, so number 5 or number, you know, between 5 and 6. So something that's kind of okay, something you're avoiding, maybe had an argument with somebody. So something, but, you know, something that's not so difficult. And I would just, how I start is I ask people to, you know, what does this emotion look like? Give it a shape. And then I ask people to think about, you know, what color would this shape be? And then I ask people to think what the shape might be made out of, and, you know, what noise it would make as well. And just by kind of, you know, taking your thoughts, you're still addressing the emotion, but you're just making it a little easier by making it more manageable by, you know, shape and noticing if the shape changes the more you look at it and you feel the emotion and the shape, and if that makes sense.
Well, it does, because we all represent things in different ways to ourselves. So I think that does make sense, actually, and gives you a sense of mastery over it as well, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not this, like, enormous, uncontrollable emotion.
Yes.
It's something. And actually, the more we sort of pay attention and sort of lean into it, we talk about leaning into it and mindfulness, and it's almost like, I once heard it described as, you know, it's like leaning against a bale of hay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have that sort of gentle leaning in, and then you can come out again, and then you can lean in. So, you know, you're not asking, like, you've got to look at this really, really painful emotion. It's really just sitting with it and just, or maybe even just saying, you know, just for 20 seconds, or I'm just going to feel it. And just, if you can, feel where you feel this emotion in your body.
Hmm.
You know, maybe it's in your shoulders or maybe your chest, or you have a, I used to have a big rock in my stomach, and it was really weird actually. After a while, I literally had this like ball in my stomach. I could feel it. And that's what I carried. And for a long time, until I kind of started just accepting that, yeah, this is a whole nother conversation about acceptance as well.
And oh, I want to come
on to this.
Okay.
You know, you're okay to feel as you're feeling. You know, you haven't failed because, you know, you're feeling these emotions.
It's nobody's fault.
Being.
We're not taught these skills.
No.
We weren't taught mindfulness when we went to school. We weren't taught actually much of really anything of particular life skills, I suppose.
Except, I would say, I remember my granny saying, "Oh, Natasha, just stop for a moment and take some deep breaths." Yeah.
Well, yes. Yes, that is true. And yes, stop and take some. My mum used to say that all the time. Yeah, stop and take some. So they were right, but I don't think they'd have called it mindfulness then.
No.
And they certainly wouldn't have had the science to back it up. but yeah, that perennial housewife, I was going to say old wives' tale, but it's not a tale, is it? Because it's true. That perennial housewife wisdom.
It's sort of wisdom, you know. It's just like, you know, get outside and get some fresh air if you've got too much energy. It's like, go for a walk now, go for a run, or go to the gym. You go and get rid of some energy.
Because it's all energy. It's just blocked energy, right?
Mm.
But if you try and run away from it, it'll just keep it in place, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's just sort of being gentle with yourself as
well. Well, I like the way you say a gentle lean in. So it's not like you're going to face this emotion and slam into it head on. It's a gentle lean in for 20 seconds and then out. And gentle lean for 20 seconds. You know, it's a wound. It's got to be treated nicely.
Yeah.
You know, this is what you're all about. This is what I sense from you. It's kind of just this real gentleness, self-gentleness.
And kindness.
Kindness
as well.
To yourself.
We talk about self-love, but I think kindness is a little easier. You know, loving yourself is quite a big call for a lot of people. And actually just saying, I just want to be a little bit of self-kindness. And whether that's just sitting down quietly for 5 minutes with a cup of tea and putting your phone, dare I say it, to the side.
Mm.
Or getting to bed early, or drinking more water, or getting out for a walk.
Do you see a lot of clients with depression?
I do. I see a lot of clients who are just managing a lot of stuff. And this is modern day society, so there are a lot of clients managing a lot of really big things as well. And I think sometimes it's very easy to think you're the only one going through it.
Hardly.
And yeah, and actually you're not. It's really, you know, like, you know, Neil sort of putting this podcast together, it's, you know, just about people saying it's okay to feel as you're feeling. You haven't failed in any way.
No, nor are you wrong or broken or bad or...
No, and the one thing I just wanted to add, actually, is
please
just be really aware or mindful or whatever you want to call it, or notice even, if you don't want to, you know, say mindful, is just notice the words you use about yourself. Like, for example, you know, I'm so stupid, or I'm so this, or I'm such an idiot, or, you know, be really aware of the words you use against yourself, and just sort of say, you know what, I'm just doing the best I can on today without maybe a lot of sleep or, you know, stress at work. Just be aware of the words you use about yourself.
And be easy on yourself. And be kind to yourself.
All that lovely stuff.
All that lovely stuff. Easier said than done sometimes, but at least the conversation's happening. At least we're working out how to do it, you know.
Yeah, and I would just kind of say as well, if you don't mind me saying, is, you know, just have like four things. Write down four things that you can do to help you feel better, and have them with you all the time, whether it's a phone screenshot or, you know, a post-it note in the car or somewhere at work if you're stressed at work. Four things that you can do, and it's whether, you know, if you're at work, going to sit in the loo in the, you know, bathroom and just doing some deep breaths, slow deep breaths, just getting out some fresh air at lunchtime, you know, maybe just telling somebody at work that you trust that you're having a tough time, so you're not sitting there on your own, and, you know, just, yeah, share. There are so many people feeling, when I say share, I don't mean like sharing everything, just maybe just let somebody know that, you know, you're having a tough time, and yeah, the people want to help as well. I think that's what we forget.
Well, I've noticed that, and people, if you share with people, they tend to share back with you, and then you don't feel you're alone.
Yeah,
and that's my sort of first mission with this podcast is that, you know, mission one: help people feel they're not alone, because any sort of mental illness is isolating, and you feel you're the only one, and that just ain't so. It really just ain't so. And if we knew that we could have our backs, and sort of by extension, everyone's kind of got everyone's back. That's part two: create a community of back holders, as it were. As we share ideas. So, someone comes to you really depressed. What would you do? What would be your go-to technique? How would you?
If they're really depressed, I was obviously do an assessment as well, because to make sure they had some help, they'd perhaps spoken to their doctor as well. Well, I would recommend they speak to their doctor.
And you do a lot of work for people who've experienced divorce, don't you?
I do.
I mean, you've got your own divorce podcast. Now, tell us about this.
So I was sitting at my table back in 2014, my kitchen table, and not knowing where my next rent payment was going to come from. And I was just like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? And I was thinking, I can't be the first person or the first anybody who's been faced with this and divorce. And I started writing a blog, and my blog was called Divorce Goddess. And it's not like I'm like this goddess. It was just like being a good person. And I kind of got featured a bit, talking about mediation and having a kind divorce. And a kind divorce was just taking my ego out of it and just going, do you know what? I don't care what comes at me. I'm just going to be nice, because everybody expected us to have like this war and this battle. We are quite strong personalities. And I was like, do you know what? I'm not going to give you what everybody's expecting in this, because I'm kind of quite stubborn. And I just decided that I was just going to throw kindness at it, no matter what was going to happen. And I started my podcast at the end of last year, and it's actually doing really well.
Fantastic. You get lots of listeners.
Well, it got really high up in the American charts.
Come on.
Really high.
Pray tell. Come on, show off. What's it called?
Well, it's called Divorce Goddess.
Divorce Goddess, that's what it's called. Okay. Yeah. So just search for it on iTunes, yeah?
Yeah.
Divorce Goddess. I'll put a link.
And subscribe as well.
To it as well. And what sort of things do you cover?
Sorry. It's
Sorry.
I cover things, and I interview lovely guests too. So I talk about like really inspirational stories, how to deal with alcohol, narcissism. We've got stories of lawyers in America as well who are doing really amazing things, encouraging people to divorce kindly. We have got a couple coming on who have written a book called Our Happy Divorce. So there's this kind of real movement to try and sort of, you know, be a bit more forgiving and kinder to each other.
So it's like conscious uncoupling. No.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I'm not sure Gwyneth's the most popular person, and I think people struggle with the conscious uncoupling, but it's just kind of being kind. And, you know, my big thing was that, you know, you're not all done arguing by the time you got to having a divorce. Why would you want to pay to then argue and pay people because you're arguing to make decisions about your children? And I kind of feel like, I know a lot of people might think it's easier said than done sometimes, and it is, but we always have a choice. You know, we have a choice about the words we use, which we know are going to wind up our partner. We have the choice of how we act, the looks we give each other in meetings, you know? whether you're going to be deliberately late at pickups, drop-offs with kids, all this stuff. And I just cover loads and loads of stuff like that.
The Divorce Goddess Podcast.
Yeah.
It sounds great. It's and
I'm really enjoying it.
Are you?
I get to talk to some amazing people.
And learn heaps as well. This is what I found doing this podcast. You know, it's like yourself. I meet inspirational people. I learn things that I didn't know. And it really is interesting stuff. And much needed stuff as well. Because ultimately, it makes it easier for us, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And what a nice idea. Just throw kindness at it. And obviously, it's all come out in the wash pretty well.
It has, and we're
good
friends, and friends with partners, and the children or teenagers now are very cool, and I guess I just wanted them to see that, you know, good stuff can come out of hard stuff as well.
Yeah, good for you.
Painful stuff.
Mm. Good life lesson for them.
Yeah.
A very good life lesson for them.
Yeah, yeah.
You little inspiration, you.
Well, I don't know about that. You just try. You know, as a human being, you just turn up every day and you just try and do the best you can. And that's what you can do, I guess.
Well, it seems to be working for you. You seem to be doing pretty well.
Oh, I feel very grateful, and I have a lot of appreciation for my life and being where I am now.
That's wonderful.
Working with lovely people. So.
And in a position to help a lot of people as well, because you must be quite busy on the coaching front.
Yeah, I am, actually.
You do energy work as well.
Yeah, I do energy work.
Come on, let's hear it. Let's hear about it.
It's so funny. So I'm a Reiki master teacher, but ever since I was younger, I always kind of had this, people call it a gift. And I remember doing all this training, and I turned around to my sister and went, yeah, I've done Reiki this. And she went, oh, you always felt like you had like magic hands anyway, like hot hands. So I was like, oh, okay. And I just... I kind of normalize it because it's nothing to be worried about or scared about. And it's just, I don't know, it's conditioning for us all to be sort of slightly untrusting about stuff like energy work. But it's really powerful stuff. And I say powerful in a very gentle way. Most people fall asleep on my therapy bed, or they walk in my magic cabin, as I call it, and they just start crying, and they go, why am I crying? I haven't cried for about 5 years. And I'm like, it's okay.
Because you needed to release.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you know what? They just cry, and then they feel so much better, even just crying, and that's it.
Mm.
It can be as simple as that.
And I've had Reiki treatment. It's nothing scary at all. It's very pleasant, actually.
Aww. It's lovely.
Yeah, it's nice. Mm. So what's coming up for you in the future then? What's the next big dream, Tosh?
The next big dream is I'm going to take all my stuff and put it on YouTube as well.
Are you actually?
And I am.
Can have our own channel and all that.
And I am. And I'm going on the speaking circuit as well.
Oh, so good for you.
I've got three speaking opportunities at the end of February.
Do you enjoy all this stuff, all the radio and public speaking and that?
Yeah.
Because I think you'd be great on radio.
Do you?
Yeah, I do.
I love it. I seriously love it.
Yeah, I do. That's why I invited you to the studio rather than doing this over the phone, because some people walk in here and they're like, oh, my God, a bit intimidated, and some, like you, just sort of lap it up. It's like, yeah, I feel like I belong here, which is...
Yeah.
And it's a nice thing to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel very...
And podcasting's a great way of getting your message out there. So, you know, I'll always champion podcasts.
Yeah.
Divorce Goddess.
Divorce Goddess, I know. People, I remember being on the TV and... It was quite a few years ago, and people would go, Divorce Goddess, like, they didn't know what to say. And I was like, no, I'm just going to stay with it. And
yeah, well, who's laughing now?
I know.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's really interesting, actually, because I remember being filmed for, like, they're talking about mediation and good divorces on TV, and I was being filmed, and this cameraman said to me, he said, you are a very clever lady. And I always remember that. Yeah, so Divorce Goddess, and... Yeah,
I think you're being a little humble. I mean, come on, it's great. You've got a hugely successful podcast. you are allowed to boast on this show. Otherwise, I'll boast for you.
Okay, well, very kind. I'm going to boast.
Come on.
There's like about, I don't know, 800,000 podcasts now, and I was... I think I'm far less than that, actually. I'm higher up the charts. I think I've been into about 100 on the US relationship charts.
Well, that's fantastic.
I know.
In the top 100 in the US charts. So, well, clearly you've got a message that people need to hear. I mean, I Christ, I mean, but how much more proof do you need?
I know, and people kind of like the kindness aspect as well. So that's what they're kind of really going for.
Yeah.
So,
I guess the cameraman was right.
Yeah, yeah. I just think it's coming back to what you feel rather than listening to what other people feel. Because I remember the one thing in my divorce, speaking to really well-intentioned friends, and they were going, oh, you know, fight, you know, you've got to get his pension, you've got to get this, and fight him for this, and fight him for that. And I remember feeling, like, so sick in my stomach because I just didn't want to fight.
So you were true to yourself.
Yeah.
And in daring to be true to yourself and care for yourself and allowing yourself to feel what you feel, now you've got a message that can inspire millions. Yet another divorce battle would have inspired no one.
Yeah.
It would just be more of the same old shit.
Yeah.
You dared to do it your own way and look at the result.
Yeah.
Look at the result. So I say well done you.
Oh, thank you.
I say well done for pioneering it, well done for being brave enough to do it, and thank you for sharing your story. And thank you for being so open, because this is how we heal, I think. The conversations start, we share experiences. It's almost like a big sort of healing circle, I imagine. You know, I imagine all the listeners to this podcast, sort of big old healing circle, and then share stories, new strategies.
Yeah.
Help people feel they're not alone, and then new strategy. Kindness. Who knew?
Who knew?
Who knew?
I know. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Being kind? Oh, God, it's got to be more complicated than that.
And do you know what? This is the thing.
I know.
It's not complicated, but we just, in our human way of trying to control everything, have made everything so complicated, and it's not.
Would you say you're spiritual, not religious? Are you in that bracket? That's where I'm at.
For me,
40% of the world is apparently
what spiritual,
but not religious.
Really?
Doesn't practice a specific religion, but considers themselves, but identifies as spiritual. 40% apparently.
And spiritual doesn't have to be like, you know, it doesn't have to be woo-woo and scary. It can just be that you just feel very at peace with yourself and, you know, you just, it can be, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, a particular, you know, belief in any system. It can just be, you know, just you trusting that, you know, you've got your own back.
What a lovely way to end the interview. I love that. Tosh Britton, where can we find you online?
Well, I have my lovely new website called, it's www.toshbritton.com.
BRITTAIN.
Oh, no, A-N.
Okay, toshbritton.com.
Yeah, A-N. And I've also got my Divorce Goddess, which again is www.divorcegoddess.com. I'm on Instagram as Divorce Goddess or Tosh Britton. I come twofold. And Twitter, Tosh Britton, Divorce Goddess, whatever. And yeah, and LinkedIn, I'm under Tosh Britton as well. So one part of my work I'd just like to put in here is talking to lawyers and helping them encourage their clients to be more mindful with each other, which is an enormous step forward with a divorce professional.
This is pretty evolved thought.
Yeah. Well, I just thought I wanted to go to source and start teaching lawyers to help them be more mindful for themselves, but also for their clients, because they come up against, you know, a lot of anger, and they've got to look after themselves as well. And I just thought, rather than waiting until everybody's angry and battling, you know, and there are lawyers, big firms of lawyers as well, who are really, who I've been talking to since the beginning of January, who are very open to kinder divorces. And, you know, the courts are pretty much, you know, they're full and breaking point. And there are a lot of families, more importantly, with a lot of children who are really suffering under the fallout of high conflict divorces.
And that's the important thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So a very timely message. Tosh Britton, thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been great. Thank you.
Thank you.